Edward Bliss knows how to turn a phrase. He served as writer, producer, and editor for Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite. He founded the Broadcast Journalism Program at American University here in Washington and taught there for many years. He was born in China, where his father, Edward Bliss Sr., was a doctor, a medical missionary in China for 40 years. Bliss Jr. has written a book about his father, Beyond the Stone Arches.
1880, 1890, there was this movement of Protestant churches to send people out to India, Japan, China to convert the heathen. Gradually, they came to feel that they should serve the people, and they sent out doctors and agricultural agents to help the people as human beings, the body as well as the soul. I was very interested and proud of my father. After he had been in China a year, he never again in any letter referred to the heathen, just in his first letters. He came to respect them so much. He came to love China. But this movement of the missionaries, though, was really remarkable. It was almost like the Peace Corps movement of today. A lot of young people, college people, got interested in going out and helping people in other countries.
What was it about China? Was it someone he met?
It was accidental. He wanted to go to Africa, just as Livingston did. And the mission board told him, we don't have anything for you in Africa, but how about China? And he felt, quote, the call. And so off to China he went.
Now, China, at this time, this was before communism, before the republic, China was an empire. This was imperial China.
When he went out there in 1892, the Manchu Empire had about another 20 years to go. 1911-12 is when they were overthrown. In 1912, the republic was established.
Now, he must have found things in China medically that were unknown here, diseases and the like.
Oh, yes. He found out, for example, there are different kinds of malaria. The textbook said the malaria, period. Mm-hmm. He found there are varieties of malaria, and they have to be treated differently. And a lot of the things he came across weren't in any textbook he'd had in medical school. They were brand new to him. He discovered, for example, the Chinese were prone to glaucoma. And so on his first furlough, he took postgraduate work at Harvard on how to operate glaucoma. He was an internist, but before he was through, he was doing appendectomies and taking bullets from the bowels of soldiers, and he was an all-around surgeon by the time he was, but he practiced on all these poor people.
And what types of medicines did he have at his disposal?
Well, he had the medicines of the day, but when he started out, things were quite primitive. No x-ray, of course, because there was no electricity, so when he operated, he didn't have the benefit of x-ray. No refrigeration to keep medicines, serums and things. He had to be resourceful. And I remember, you know, when he didn't have adhesive tape, you know, and he would use my mother's sewing thread for binding up bandages and things. He had to make do. Iodine was a big thing. Quinine and iodine.
Of course, this is long before antibiotics and penicillin. Explain where Shaowu is and where the nearest doctor would have been if you couldn't get to Shaowu.
Well, there was a doctor about 120 miles away down the river in Hankow. If you picture China and Taiwan, the province where Father worked was just opposite Taiwan. Those islands, Matsu and Kamoi, are just off the shore of Fujian province. It used to be Fujian province, but as you know, they've changed so many names with a new romanization. The port opposite Taiwan is Fuzhou, which is now called Fuzhou, and there's the Min River there that goes up into the interior. And Father's hospital was 250 miles up this river.
I can't get over the scope of history covered by two people, father and son. I'm talking to a man whose father was born shortly after the end of the Civil War and was a grown man functioning in China in the 1880s.
I know. I was thinking myself the other day. My father was born in December 1865. I want to say a word for my mother, too. She was a Nebraska farm girl. She was the only member of the family that ever went to college. She went to Doan College, a little college in Nebraska. And she went out to China all by herself. She was about 25 years old, and she says, I'm going to China. And off she went. And I think that took a lot of guts. She taught music in a girls' school in Fuzhou and English, and she loved those girls. I remember last year she showed me pictures of her with the girls, and she said, this one and that one, and they were so dear, and so on and so on.
And you spent your boyhood in Shawu.
Oh, yes. It was a wonderful boyhood. I was so fortunate. This was a peaceful time in China. It was after the Boxer Rebellion, and it was before the strong nationalist feeling arose in the late 20s. I left there in 1921, and I picked up the language, of course, from all my playmates, the Chinese boys. I don't remember learning Chinese, but I learned it as well. I spoke Chinese as well as English when I was nine. Interesting thing happened the other day. There's a Chinese worker where I live, and she held the door for me when I was carrying a lot of bags. She was standing right in front of me, and her Chinese face was right close to me. Well, in Chinese, thanks is xie xie, you know, it's a toss-off, you know, thanks, xie xie. But I looked in her face, and she had made such an effort to hold the door for me, and I said, "Dōqiā." I had no idea I knew that word.
It's a more formal thank you.
The feeling is thank you very much. That's not a literal translation. But I couldn't believe I was using that word. I hadn't, that expression, I had no idea I knew it. It came out of my subconscious because that Chinese face was right up close to me. And I hadn't used that word since I was 8 or 9 years old. And here I am, 88.
Edward Bliss Jr. is author of Beyond the Stone Arches, An American Missionary Doctor in China, 1892 to 1932.